Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by BetOnline.ag. NFL Week 10, Monday Night Football, the topic for debate as the San Francisco Giants, the New York Giants, and Payne, this is what happens. This is what happens after a football weekend where I don't get the best of the number. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by Payne. And Payne, I might just turn over to you and let you host today.
That could be scary because I did not wake up this morning feeling very dangerous.
I mean, I'm just rattled. It is the New York Giants on the road to the San Francisco 49ers. Of course, we will get to that football game. We have Dr. David Chow here to break down all the biggest injuries and what that means for your betting and your favorite teams going forward. But all right, back to the focus, the weekend that we saw. I mean, can we get a good number? I mean, maybe we should have taken 3.5 with the Jags first thing Sunday night between you and I.
Yeah, that would have been nice. I certainly sent it to you as saying, hey, this is one we need to focus on here. But kind of sulked a bit last Sunday because it was such a terrible freaking day. Zoned out, got away from it a little bit, and woke up Monday morning, and there we were at 3. And it's tough to go on Sunday night, obviously, right now.
What? And I think it's just one of those things, too, that people take for granted, like how sports betting works, that if you're going to be successful, you can roll out of bed, you can bet when you feel like it, when in reality, if you want to turn this into your job or treat it with some level of seriousness, I mean, it becomes observing the markets 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, being willing to move on certain days when the limits are or aren't there, knowing that, all right, you can't step away from the computer for an hour. It drives me absolutely nuts, unlike some of the financial markets sometimes that actually have an open and closing time.
We joke about this all the time, and this is somewhat satire because we got a lot of, stock guys listening to this. But, man, you guys are a bunch of pussies. 9 to 4. Man, I love to be in a market that's 9 to 4. You can't do one of the three S's and you potentially miss a number. Like, shower, shit, and shave. Like, God forbid you go away from the screen for an hour. Like, you could be screwed. That could be your entire weekend. Literally. Taking 3.5 versus 3 in the Jags game decided whether I had a winning or losing Sunday. That's literally like a week's worth of work coming down to a half a point because, you decide to get away for a little bit. It's just, I would love 9 to 4. That would be awesome. That's the life right there. I could spend all weekend and on the beach, do all these fun things that the stock market guys do. Kidding, obviously, but yeah. It's a completely different world.
It is a lot different, and obviously we understand how much work goes into being successful when you're handling the financial markets and the large amounts that are changing hands there as well. But you joke about the Jags going from 3 to 3.5 and what that means the weekend. Three games for me fall within a half point of the number, and two pushes could have been wins, losses, etc. But either way, getting off on a tangent the first 3 minutes, want to start this week on a high note. So let's get into kind of some of the things that we saw over the weekend. And normally, Payne, we do the good, the bad, and the ugly. I almost want to call an audible. So we're going to start with last night's game between the Cowboys and Eagles and what the major takeaways were for you there, and then discuss some of the other big things that we saw, what surprised us or what more or less flabbergasted, given the way some of those games played themselves out.
Didn't love the Eagles offense in the first half, right? Running a little too much on early downs. It's not a very good run team. Didn't pass the ball enough in areas that I thought they could exploit, which was Zach Ertz. He tore it up in the second half once they went a little more pass heavy. Didn't love the decision on fourth and the longest 1 yard I've ever seen in my life, deciding to run it right up the middle without a lead back. Carson Wentz looked like he could have snuck it. I mean, at that point, it's 3-0. I'm the most aggressive guy in the world, but I mean, kick your field goal, take the three. They started to come back in the second half, which was pretty expected. I thought the offense would get humming. The problem is as soon as they tied at 13, the defense just crapped the bed, mostly because of injury, right? You lost two starting corners and a backup safety basically within the series. That was when it was tied 13-13. Then they just couldn't get off the field. And all the first half snaps, because their offense couldn't stay on the field, the defensive line started to gas out. So it was a must-win game for the Cowboys, and I think they did enough there. But I just – you start to question some things. And I've – Philadelphia fans, you should absolutely be happy with the Super Bowl victory, and we certainly see – the following year, that Super Bowl hangover a little bit. But I've said this, and I said this at the beginning of the season, we're going to probably find out that that was quite the anomaly. Like, Nick Foles just kicking ass, kicking Zimmer and Belichick's ass, like two defensive guys. Then he comes into this season, he throws up with no pressure against Dirk Cutter, right? It's just like these, it was an anomaly type season last year. Everything fell their way. And then there's been a lot of transition, right? Doug Peterson goes and writes his book. Maybe he let too much out of the bag, or maybe the brains left town, right? Frank Reich left town, John DeFilippo left town. Maybe the brains left town. Let's see what's going on. Let's see what happens with the Eagles moving forward.
Well, the Eagles weren't the only inept offense that we saw on display yesterday. Tampa Bay took things pain to another level of futility, given the fact that they amassed 501 yards, almost 400 of which through the air, 7.5 yards per play. They do go minus 4 in turnovers. They muster a grand total of 3 points and 500 yards, something I've never seen even at this level.
I tried not to watch the second half. I know, again, a lot of sharp bettors were all over Tampa throughout the course of the week. One of the bigger positions of the week, even once the limits rose on, it was late Saturday night, you could get three even, some three plus money laying it with Tampa, closes 3.5. And that's a pretty big move. And it took a lot of money to do that. And there was multiple positions on that game. And then they came back in the second half because obviously the on-field production was an absolute ass kicking. It was just a couple turnovers. So if you got that to slow down, the turnover machine that was Tampa was likely going to cover that number. Now, I thought there was good effort in the first half. I went back and watched it this morning because I know there was some talk among some guys that said, hey, this team just didn't put a lot of effort. I watched the entire first half. There was a lot of effort, and even early on in the second half. But it was ugly. And clearly, right, like Tampa's trying to win these games, or else you would have went to the young quarterback. Like, Dirk Cutter's job is on the line. Like, those dudes' jobs are on the line. They're trying to win games. It was just very ugly.
Yeah, not exactly a ring endorsement. And you mentioned that number going from 3 even all the way out to 3.5. There were folks that I spoke to more than happy to lay $1.70 and $1.80 on the money line as well. Just trying to illustrate how strong a position that really became, knowing some of the deficiencies and cluster injuries the Redskins were dealing with. But as bad teams do every now and again, they piss all over themselves, and Tampa unfortunately fell into that same bucket. A couple of offenses, Payne, that one surprised me in the fact that they were finally able to get things right, and one didn't surprise me that they got things right, but how dominant they were, both residing in the AFC North. The Steelers go absolutely bonkers on Thursday. I mean, you'd been pounding the drum forever, saying this Carolina secondary was extremely overrated, and the Steelers illustrate that. 52 points, 8 of 11 on third down, almost 8 yards per play, and Big Ben a perfect passer rating. But the Cleveland Browns, damned if we do, damned if we don't. 1 week late, they put together a complete effort in a win against the Atlanta Falcons. Nick Chubb goes absolutely bonkers, and the defense did enough to stymie what Matt Ryan and company were looking to accomplish.
You didn't get my, I know you're traveling, so you didn't get my quote at the top of the show. Did you not hear Baker Mayfield's post-game press conference?
I did not hear his post-game presser.
It was my spirit animal. It was what you would expect. He told the media he woke up feeling dangerous yesterday morning. And so, I'll have to pretend here that we didn't bet the Browns. So I kind of expected this, right? Like, it was another game that was worked on all week, opened as low as, you know, Atlanta minus 3, but Sunday morning plus 6 was the real position. Market closed 5.5. And I think for good reason, right? Like, if you're not always focused on the result, but the actual process and what actually happens like on the game field, you can identify value. And so like the previous week, we saw a very competent Browns offense, I thought. We've talked about this. The scoreboard said 21 points. Cleveland chose not to take their extra points, so they could have easily had 24. And then with a couple minutes left in the late in that game against Kansas City, Cleveland has first and 10 from the KC 30. In live wagering, Cleveland was a favorite to score a touchdown there and cover the spread, despite not playing, you know, two corners for three plus quarters. Against, you know, one of the most electric offenses in the NFL. This week, you started to look, right? They got Ward back. They got Demarius Randall back. Joe Schobert, who's like the heart and soul of their defense at linebacker, he returned. But just like leading up to this game, we've been very confident. Like in Freddie Kitchens, I've been saying this for a long time. I like Freddie Kitchens, and he was by far and away the most competent mind in the entire Cleveland building. He's a Bruce Arians disciple. He knows where the ball needs to go. We've kind of clamored for Duke Johnson for years on this podcast, and this is the big takeaway. And I wrote this down. First 8 weeks, zero touchdowns for Duke Johnson. Last two games with Kitchens, three touchdowns. First 8 games, 20 catches. Last 2 games, 13, right? Kitchens is running Chubb properly. There's creativity to the offense. They still don't have a true number one wide receiver that can get separation outside. Mayfield is throwing the ball down the field, just like Arians' offenses would. Average 10.3 yards per pass attempt. On the season, they're just at 6. So, like, this is a Bruce Arians dude. Things are changing. This Browns team, I think, is going to be one you can bet. Hopefully they can get to the bye. The only negative is they haven't had the bye yet, and they've spent so much time, especially their defense, on the field this season. The bye is going to be welcome for this team.
Yeah, well, yeah, and every time you say, like, Duke Johnson gets involved, it reminds me of Major League. Like, they're going to the Duke, and that's clearly – it's clearly paid dividends as they get things rolling. Nick Chubb, of course, breaks off a 90-plus yard touchdown run. So very, very curious to see what this Browns offense looks like going forward. Two teams, Payne, that I thought were downright dumpster fires and disasters. I mean, we can take our pick. Is it the New York Jets, who somehow allow 41 points to the Buffalo Bills and their fourth starting quarterback of the season in Matt Barkley, 6.2 yards per play, or the Cincinnati Bengals, who take on water faster than the Titanic the way they attempt to play defense in the NFL?
You must have woken up in a terrible mood. Very negative today.
I mean, I want to get some of the negativity off my chest. It's a little bit different. I'm on the road, so I'm away from some of the creature comforts at home. Got a little bit rattled, didn't have my normal routine, so I'm trying to use the podcast as a vent session.
I can see that. You know, the Jets, they're a dumpster fire right now. 3.6 yards per play. For 3 weeks now, they're averaging 4 yards per play. Like, it's just, it's a bad offense. It's led to a tired defense. You know, Todd Bowles is a defensive guy. Your defense can't allow a guy who just got off the couch and Matt Barkley to pick you apart. You back out a lot of the noise of those kneels late in the game from Barkley. Buffalo ran it 44 times for 214 yards. It's nearly 5 yards an attempt, right? You can't get bullied in a division game in your own building as a defensive coach. So this is a much-needed bye for the Jets. They're going to need to figure that out. For the Bengals, like, I'm not going to make too much of that. It's not very difficult. It's pretty simple here. Like, everything is bad right now for Cincinnati. Poor coaching, horrific defense. The injury bug hit the team. The offense was basically the saving grace for the first few weeks of the season. They've trended downwards since the start of the Pittsburgh game. So Bengals aren't very good right now.
All right, and since I'm not in a mood to really be all that positive this morning, you got anything for a silver lining that we can use going forward to be a glass half full guy?
Yeah. See, this is the difference with us, brother. I see positivity, even in negativity.
Here we go. Here we go. If I could circulate some of the text messages you send me throughout Saturdays and Sundays, that script would be completely reversed.
That might be a line. I see positivity in the negativity. That might be good.
We'll get that on a 2019 Bet the Board t-shirt.
There you go. Byron Leftwich. I like what I saw. And so watched that game a little bit. We had something on the total there. Leftwich, I loved the opening script. And I've been like kind of hinting at this without coming out and actually saying it. Leftwich has repeatedly said he's from the Bruce Arians school of offense, that his mind and philosophy mirrors Bruce Arians. And so I think, you know, if you're a fantasy guy who's got David Johnson or Christian Kirk or Fitzgerald, like, that's a positive, right? It's not a lot of running the ball up the middle into stacked boxes. It's about getting players in space, and specifically Johnson, right? He got the ball in open space a ton. He got it through the air, which was nice. And I was looking at this morning. Weeks 1 through 7 with Mike McCoy, David Johnson averaged per game 4.3 targets, 2.9 receptions, 23.7 receiving yards, and 0.14 touchdowns. In just 2 weeks with Byron Leftwich, DJ is averaging 6.5 targets, 5.5 receptions, 63 yards a game, and half a touchdown per game. And you had David Johnson come out in the post game. Even though they lost, he did have a smile on his face and said, man, it feels like 2016 again. So the Cardinals are trending, I think, offensively in the right direction, and it looks like early on the market seems to agree for week 11.
Yeah, the number taking off a little bit. They'll have a very winnable home game against the much maligned Oakland Raiders. But, you know, that provides us the perfect segue into some of the look-ahead numbers, Payne, that we do here every Monday morning on the Bet the Board podcast. And I guess we can start at the top, where it's the Carolina Panthers, extra time to prepare on the road from the shellacking they took at the hands of the Steelers in that particular game. Current number has the Panthers, we'll call it a 3.5, 4-point favorite at betonline.ag. Look-ahead number here had the Panthers a 2.5-point chalk. To the untrained eye, oh, it's just a 1-point move, but through a very key number of 3. The Lions, I mean, I don't know what they were doing in the first half yesterday against the Bears, but what do we make of two teams looking to try and bounce back this coming Sunday?
That's a massive move, like 6.5% in value there. So, massive. You know, the Panthers are going to benefit, I think, with some extra time to prepare. They're coming off the loss. They have a ground game right now that's pretty difficult to prepare for, and the Lions just can't stop the run. You obviously also want to monitor that Darius Slay, TJ Lang. Those two guys are injured. They're basically the Lions' premier players outside of Matthew Stafford. Stafford himself doesn't seem to be getting much protection the last few weeks. If he gets time, he's going to have opportunity against the Panthers secondary. That's a big if, right? He's been sacked 16 times in 2 games. The Lions offensive line, they've allowed another 19 tackles for loss in 2 games. So this was kind of an offensive unit we thought was trending up. Don't have TJ Lang. That's when you're going to want to monitor that injury situation along the offensive line.
Yeah, and a couple other skill position injuries, too. Kerryon Johnson, just to me, hasn't looked quite the same as far as bursts. They're still trying to utilize him and get him his touches. And then Marvin Jones will have to keep tabs on his availability going forward as well, knowing how
Kerryon
much
was limited all week.
Yep.
Shocked he played.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, not only shocked he played, but the amount of times they tried to get him his touches. I think he ended up with, you know, 15 touches like we've grown accustomed to. He did have the one touchdown. 15 touches running the football, and I think they threw him a handful of times.
They did. Wasn't overly efficient, and I think you nailed it. When did Marvin Jones left in that game, which is, you know, now that you're without Tate and, you know, you got to monitor the Marvin Jones thing, certainly helpful for Golladay owners, you would think, but and that could be 2 big weapons out, and you certainly need your pass catchers against a team like Carolina.
Yeah, most effective way to attack that Panther secondary, still reeling from that 50-burger that the Steelers hung on him on Thursday night. A couple other teams in the NFC North, Payne. Current line has the Bears, a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag, playing host to the Minnesota Vikings. Look-ahead line here, though, only had the Bears, a 2-point favorite. And for the second straight week, we see a team on a bye, almost getting a little too much disrespect in the market.
Yeah. Should be a good division game. See, you know, if the Bears can win the game, certainly they're going to control the North. They'd be up 2 full games. It'll be interesting to see if the Vikings O-line can do enough to hold up. Also be interesting to see if Zimmer off the bye can do enough to confuse Trubisky. So those will be the 2 interesting matchups there. Definitely a game we'll break down on Thursday, so don't want to go too far into it now. But, you know, Trubisky looked good last week, certainly was facing a Lions secondary that was fourth worst in the NFL and was without Darius Slay, so maybe he comes back to life a little bit here.
Yeah, 11 catches in that game for the Bears for Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller for 255 yards. You mentioned the Lions secondary, and the Bears looked like they were playing a glorified college football game, trying to take full advantage of some of those opportunities that were there. Interesting game with the division leader. The Washington Redskins, now 2 games clear in the NFC East, find themselves a 2.5-point home underdog to the Houston Texans. The Texans come into this one off a bye of their own at betonline.ag. Look-ahead number here, Payne, had this game listed at Pick'em.
Interesting. So the Redskins won by 2 scores, and the line went the opposite way with the Texans being off. Man. And this is not to make a joke out of it, but this is, as a professional bettor, you can see how efficient the market is starting to get, right? Washington wins by 2 scores. Line moves 2.5 points against a team that was on a bye, right? It just tells you and depicts everything that we kind of talked about at the top of the show, that Tampa just absolutely kicked Washington's ass despite what the scoreboard said. This is a tough game to gauge because the Texans are one of the luckiest teams in the NFL right now, and they went into the bye kind of beaten up on teams that weren't very good, just to put it nicely. Which I'd like to see, you know, Sean Watson getting healthier. An extra week for Demaryius Thomas getting implemented into the offense, kind of having him stop sulking for being traded. Maybe that'll help. So, you know, listen, obviously the Redskins are without both starting guards for the rest of the season. You're going to have to monitor the tackle situation there, Trent Williams and Morgan Moses. If those guys don't play, you know, Houston defensive front four could have a field day here playing against what, you know, 80% backups on the Washington O-line.
That AFC South suddenly gets extremely interesting when you look at three teams and the Titans, Colts trending, or two teams trending up, and the Titans and Colts, the Texans, as you allude to, being extremely fortunate, and the Jags, everybody's pick, at least from an odds perspective, to win this division, struggling to figure out their identity. And of course, for Jacksonville, it doesn't get much easier this coming week when they're home underdogs to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Of course, the Steelers may have a little bit of revenge on their mind from an AFC playoff game that went off the rails at Heinz Field. Current number, Steelers a 5.5-point favorite at BetOnline.ag. Look ahead number here, paying ahead the Steelers a modest 3.5-point road chalk.
I may go off the rails myself, and I just want to, this is for the stock guys who probably felt like I was beating them up. If this were the stock game and I could invest in one team from this point right now for the next 5 years, it's the Indianapolis Colts. That offensive line got figured out. Frank Reich is brilliant, and Andrew Luck looks like he's recovered. That team is going to be potent. They have a potential in the way they're drafting right now. Offensive line, defensive line, they're going to start catering to their offense, who's going to get out to big leads, and they're going to start drafting pass rushers. I like the direction of the organization. They finally nailed the GM. Like, this is going to be a really competent team. I think they're going to be good against the number here moving forward this year, but it's just going to be a flat-out good team here in the next few years.
You know, you doing this, by the way, tips your hand, and I mean, it's a win total that we're going to have to go over like 9.5 now, and every odds maker out there goes, shit, Payne loves the Colts. We're going to inflate the hell out of this number.
I was a little bit messy here on their win total this year. We went over 6, and then I went back under 7.5, and so I'm hoping that this thing falls 7, so I feel smart for once. for this game, the Steelers in Jacksonville, you obviously have significant movement for a couple of reasons here. Steelers look like world beaters on national TV in a standalone spot, and you mentioned it. They have the double revenge, but playoff revenge. Jacksonville kind of loses the game they defined as their season heading into the Colts game. I saw a tweet that you sent me earlier from Jalen Ramsey saying, can't wait to get out of here kind of thing. I want to see how
healthy. You Florida State guys aren't afraid to wear your emotions on your sleeve. Let's put it that way.
There you go. I want to see how healthy Leonard Fournette is. I know the stats looked good in terms of like overall yardage and touchdowns. Didn't run the ball overly efficient. There was a lot of rounding off in his runs. He wasn't cutting very hard. He ducked out of bounds a couple times when it's typically he's kind of being the enforcer there, creating contact when he sees a DB, kind of sniffs it out. I didn't see any of that. Now, certainly, Doug Marrone gave him a bunch of touches. Didn't really play much the last final couple drives there, so he didn't look 100% to me. And then you had the Jags starting center, Brandon Linder. He left on a cart in the third quarter, so you're going to have to figure out what that looks like, because if, you know, Linder is out, your starting center, it's tough, right? It's not just the position physically being out there, but he's the guy that gets everybody in their protections. And we talked about this last week, right? The Steelers defense now starting to blitz a lot more, and they got after Cam. So they start to send these exotic blitzes. You don't have your guy that's typically getting you in the right protections. That could spell some trouble.
Yeah, and this, like you mentioned, the Steelers' defense has looked much better over the past month than what we saw early on in the season, not only bringing pressure, but against the run. Should be a fascinating game, and Jacksonville taking on all sorts of trouble right now for a team that I think a lot of us had penciled in to one of those coveted 6 AFC playoff spots. But from the games that we're looking at the upcoming weekend to the games that were played, there's always a little bit of carnage and some collateral damage. To help us break down some of the biggest injuries out there, we bring in our weekly guest.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
He joins us every Monday here on the Bet the Board podcast to fill us in on some of the biggest injuries that'll impact not only your favorite football teams, your fantasy rosters, and of course, your sports gambling. You can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. And Dr. Chow, it wouldn't be a week in the National Football League if we saw one impactful skill position player go down. And that one this weekend appeared to be Cooper Kupp, who may be lost for the season for the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think he will be. By video, he appears to have an ACL tear. And the irony is, in week six, it was an ugly-looking horse collar tackle. And, you know, to the untrained eye, he was carted off, and he was bent in a funny position. And everyone thought his season was over then. But by video, I looked at it and didn't think it was going to be that bad. And indeed, he came back in the second half of one series, but then missed 2 weeks and then came back week nine against the Saints. And this one was a non-contact, almost nothing, where he walked slash limped a little bit off the field. But I think the news is going to be much worse. Based on video, that's what it looks like, unfortunately. And there is some early confirmation from NFL Network, although everyone is still saying wait for the MRI. But the team knows just by physical exam on the sideline or in the locker room. So expect the bad news to be confirmed later today.
Dr. Chow, two more pass catchers, and we can kind of lump them together. Not sure if you saw the injuries, but the Miami Dolphins, they've been riddled with injuries all season long. Two more this past weekend with Jakeem Grant. Looked like he made a quick little cut, and it was either a foot or an ankle injury was seen in a walking boot after. And then a play later, you had Devontae Parker kind of come up lame. He was in a sling after the game. Any news on those two receivers?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a cluster right there. And you add in Kenny Stills, who, quote, is healthy, but still coming off a groin issue. So they're pretty decimated right there. On Grant, the worry is he had antecedent Achilles pain, and there's a higher association with Achilles rupture. There wasn't a close-up view, but a quick step, and then he hopped, 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 hopped off the field, essentially. And the hope is he just restrained his Achilles and pulled up before it tore. But the worry is if he's torn his Achilles, obviously that's a big deal. Devontae Parker, fairly innocuous injury in terms of battling for the ball, arms tangled up but near his side, but left with a shoulder injury and in a sling. So I'm not seeing that to be major, but the video wasn't conclusive.
Another guy I want to talk about, and it's probably one that not a lot of people saw, but Jaguars center Brandon Linder. He was carted off with a right knee injury in the third quarter against the Colts. Obviously a big injury when you're facing the Pittsburgh Steelers coming up, who's fifth in the league in adjusted sack rate. If you don't have your center out there, that could be some trouble. Did you see anything there with that one?
Well, he pulled to the left, and it was a non-contact injury. There really wasn't a replay of it, and I don't know that TV paid a lot of attention to it. I don't think they have as many cameras in Jacksonville versus the Colts as they do for a Sunday night football game.
Completely hear you.
But, you know, I mean, carted off, I mean, like Cooper Kupp, like Aaron Rodgers, week one, that doesn't mean the end of the world because he was carted off. But, you know, non-contact and everyone worries about ACL. It looked fairly innocuous, but there was only one kind of distanced sideline view, no second end zone view, no close-up on the Jaguars center. So we'll just have to wait and see a little bit.
And what did you make of Leonard Fournette? I know he practiced multiple days in a row, wasn't overly successful, although he did have two touchdowns. Looked like he was rounding off some of his runs, wasn't cutting as hard as he usually does, and was ducking out of bounds a little bit. Did you see anything there in terms of how healthy he is and what the impact could be moving forward and how healthy he is for the upcoming game against Pittsburgh?
My thought all along was that he was going to be healthy after the bye. And I said he wasn't going to play until he had three straight full practices, which he did this week. And he wasn't even on the injury report. You know, I haven't studied the film because during the games, I sort of jump around whenever there is an injury per se. But I think Fournette did what I expected in terms of the Jaguars were going to lean on him. And I think they're going to try and lean on him again against Pittsburgh. They're trying to get back to their formula that they had that got them to the AFC Championship game last year. And that was to rely on Fournette, not on Blake Bortles. And, you know, certainly I will agree with you. He wasn't necessarily fully effective, but he had 24 carries. So they were feeding him the ball, 53 yards and one touchdown on the ground. But overall, he had 29 touches and 109 yards and two touchdowns. So he certainly was their workhorse.
No doubt about it.
Continue to be that way.
No doubt about it. And just one quick one from Sunday Night Football, Ronald Darby. He was seen kind of holding his right knee, went into the blue tent, came back out, but didn't return to the game. He's absolutely needed for that Philadelphia Eagles secondary. It was a mess right now. Anything on Ronald Darby?
Well, he didn't come back to the game, but, you know, one sideline view was on a scramble play, and he was trying to stay with the receiver there, Alshon Jeffrey, but did not. It was a non-contact injury, so everyone starts to worry about the ACL like Cooper Kupp, but I didn't see that type of mechanism, so I'm holding out hope but that he'll be okay, and it's not a season ender, but we'll have to see how it sorts itself out today and this week.
And just two more that are kind of look-aheads to the next week, and they face each other. Joe Flacco, A.J. Green. Flacco dealing with the hip, A.J. Green still dealing with the foot-toe injury. What is their prognosis for the upcoming Week 11 game?
I think it's quite doubtful that both of them will play. In fact, I think neither will play. A.J. Green's already been said to be out for at least 2 weeks, and there was a report of into this December even. He apparently is out of his walking boot. He does not need surgery, as was my thought last week. It's not a season ender, but a turf toe is what he has by video. And that's a big deal. And a lot of people say, well, it's just a toe. What's the big deal? 50% of your push-off strength, which obviously is pretty important for a wide receiver to run, jump, and cut, comes from the big toe itself. So if you can't do that, you're obviously pretty darn ineffective. So this is going to bother A.J. Green. He's not playing this week, and it could be as long as December before he's 100%. Joe Flacco, on the other hand, is undetermined yet. There's some word that he could have surgery. Is the season over? What's going on with his hip? I'm not thinking his season will be over. I'm not thinking that he's going to need surgery, but it's a pretty quick turnaround for some reports that he was on crutches around the Baltimore area, at least late last week, to returning to play the following week. And who knows, with the pressure in Baltimore, maybe they want to see what's going to happen with Lamar Jackson. And this is sort of convenient to have this happen. And I mean, similar to potentially what happened with Sam Darnold taking a week off.
Always interesting when you wonder about the politics in the locker room and how things relate to some of the on-field performance. And while Payne brought up A.J. Green and his lingering status going forward, Dr. Chow, how do we look at Rob Gronkowski, who was held out of the game again for the New England Patriots? They have their bye coming up. Is this just going to be a week-to-week thing, as Gronk is a shell of his former self, dealing with a laundry list of back, ankle, whatever injuries it may be, keeping him sidelined?
Well, I think it's really the back. I think the ankle is the throw-in at this point in time. And there's good and bad news with what's happening with Gronk. The bad news is certainly that this is not a simple muscle spasm. This is 4 weeks now. So a muscle spasm or something like that doesn't last that long. And the good news is it doesn't yet seem to be related directly to his previous back or disc surgeries. Yes, this has obviously lingered. And if you're a glass half full guy, you're saying, well, the Patriots are holding him out right now. They have the bye next week. This gives him some more continued rest and ability to rehab. And hopefully this means he can bounce back strong for the rest of the season. And if you're a glass half empty guy, here we go again with Gronk, right? He's injured all the time, and he's never coming back, and he'll never be the same again. So we'll have to sort that out over time. But it's not all doom and gloom. I mean, there's some reason to think that he might be able to come back, but it's a little bit unpredictable.
Normally, I would say all Boston fans are that doom and gloom outlook, but given the fact they've won about 97 championships since 2001, I'd hope that they're a little bit more upbeat and optimistic about things. And last but not least, a player who had a major impact on the headlines but never actually saw the football field this year, and I don't think there was video out there about it, but when you look at a guy like Dez Bryant who tears his Achilles in second day of practice, do we think that's more a freak accident, or is that a byproduct of a guy who goes from, all right, maybe working out in the gym a bit, to just not being game fit when he's out there on the practice field?
Yeah, great question. But before I jump to that, one final thought on Gronk and the Patriots. You know, what I observe, the Patriots are different, right? You mentioned all the championships. and it's not by luck. They really handle injuries, I think, differently. We all know about the quote secrecy, and they follow the reporting rules, but they hide the bacon a little bit, et cetera. I'm not saying they're doing anything illegal. If anything, I'm applauding how they do it. But let's take a look at Sony Michel, who didn't play last week, but then was the number one ball carrier for them by far this week. I get this is how it relates to Gronk. By observing the Patriots, a lot of other teams will return players on a limited snap count. The Patriots don't seem to do that. They seem to have a philosophy of either you're in or you're not in. And if I'm reading Bill Belichick's mind correctly, and no one can read his mind, is that I think in some ways he relishes the chance to see what the team can do without Gronk a few weeks, or Sony Michel, or in previous years, the 4-game suspension of Tom Brady, to see what his team can do. And I think he looks at it during the regular season as an opportunity for other players to step up, because in a one-off playoff game, which is inevitably coming, people can go down and you need to go to other options. He's not someone who, let's say, runs 50 power and it's successful and he keeps running it. He changes to something else, which is why, the Patriots players are always questionable on fantasy, because one week it's James White, the next week it's Chris Hogan, the week after that is Julian Edelman. And I think some of this is by design. So don't necessarily read all doom and gloom on Gronk on this. It is possible that the Patriots are just getting him ready for a playoff push, and they have the ability and the job security from the head coach to be able to make moves like this. As far as Dez Bryant is concerned, there's no question there's a combination of bad luck going on there. It's not just because he's 30 and it's his second practice. I mean, you guys are odds guys in the gambling world. I mean, there's 1,500 players in the league, and in training camp there's over 2,000 players that report. And a good number of those are over 30, and some of those are indeed not necessarily in the best shape in the world. Yet we don't have, if we have a couple hundred of those guys, it's not like we have 10 or 20 Achilles tears in the first few days of training camp. So there's no question there's something called acclimation injury, and it happens more with muscles and so forth. Did Dez being a little bit overweight have to do with it? Was he trying to be his old self and trying a little too hard and overcompensated and did this? If anything, practices in the regular season are easier than practices in training camp. So it's a little too simplistic to just blame the late season return on the Achilles.
Well, I appreciate that, Dr. Cha. I didn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and be too critical on Dez, who came into camp overweight as per Sean Payton. So always good to try and help offer a little bit of perspective in that regard. For those folks who want to keep tabs on injuries throughout the course of the regular season, encourage you follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. Listen to his podcast. Get all the latest and greatest updates to better prepare you for your bets and your fantasy lineups. Dr. Chow, thanks as always for your time this morning, and I'll look forward to speaking to you same time next week.
You're welcome.
Payne, I know we'll talk about this game more in detail when we preview, Monday Night Football between the Rams and Kansas City Chiefs, but the absence of a Cooper Kupp, on the surface, you try and figure out catch-wise, okay, productivity, it is one thing, but how big an integral part is he to what Sean McVay and this Rams offense had started to accomplish?
He's very intelligent within the offense, obviously. It just means more Gurley, more Cooks, more Woods. I mean, all those guys, Woods and Gurley can certainly act as security blankets, but in a game with a total of 64, it's going to be an offensive shootout, and you'd like to have all your weapons. So Cooper Kupp being down, not just a significant loss for this week, but it sounds like the rest of the season as well.
Your Dolphins going to be able to field an offensive roster with this laundry list of injuries you and Dr. Chow hit on?
I told you, man, it's been absolute carnage, and this is partly why it's tough for me to bet a season win total over, right? Just kind of as that teaching point, you're never going to be healthier in week 4 or week 7 as you are in week 1. So when you start to kind of peg the optimistic outlook, you're always pegging it from the beginning of the season as everyone's being healthy, and that's just not a reality in the NFL. So this is a team that's been just crushed by injuries all season long, right? Josh Sitton, the prized acquisition of the offseason, kind of solidifying that guard position for the first time in multiple decades for the Dolphins, goes out after week 1. You lose your starting center, although that isn't as large of a drop-off as people think. Swanson's actually been better than Daniel Kilgore, so it's kind of a wash there. But you played this past weekend without your left tackle and your right tackle and Tunzel and Juwan James. So hopefully the bye week you start to get a little bit healthier, but then you lose Jakeem Grant. Who knows what's going on with Devontae Parker. This is off of Still's groin. This is off Albert Wilson's hip injury. Like, they're just decimated. It's just a mess right now. Everyone's beat up and injured. So, you know, it hasn't looked pretty. They've beaten some teams that aren't very good. Brock Osweiler is your starting quarterback. Somehow Adam Gase is keeping it all together. They're 500, still kind of in the mix for a playoff push. Not that they're going to do anything, but you start to look at the schedule. You still got two games against Buffalo, although they did look more competent, and they have a very good defense, and Matt Barkley isn't going to throw touchdowns to the other team, it wouldn't appear. So those games got a little bit tougher, but you're still at that position where if you do what you're supposed to do, which is beat Buffalo twice, you're at seven wins with a couple more games to go.
Well, it's funny you mentioned injuries and opportunity being created, because that allows for an in-depth breakdown of a Monday Night Football game that I don't think the casual fan is going to tune into this fine evening. That sees the San Francisco 49ers, a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 45. And we may as well start with Nick Mullins, who make his second consecutive start for the Niners. Growing comments out of that camp that maybe it's not all related to C.J. Beathard being injured. They want to see what they have here in the Southern Miss product.
This is so interesting, right? Because they were holding out hope on the short week that C.J. Beathard would play. Now suddenly Nick Mullins is like the savior. You know.
Who knew when you go out there and you torch the Oakland Raiders with jump balls and 50-50 balls that optimism could reign supreme about your NFL future?
Mark that down, because I just coughed up a lung there, so we can hopefully have that edited out. Now we'll probably need this whole part edited out too, but hey, we'll just leave it here because this is what we do.
It's raw. It's authentic. That is Bet the Board.
Listen, you definitely have to give Nick Mullins credit, like kind of stepped in on a short week national stage, very first start, right? He was efficient. And I'm going to put this nicely, like, you have to adjust for opponent in my mind. So, you know, not only is Oakland's defense bad, but it's trending towards being the worst in the league. And you compile that with zero effort. And, you know, I'd kind of got some whispers in that direction that the team has officially quit on Gruden. And then after the game, couple reporters heard, and they aren't going to mention names because they'd like to still have locker room access, but there was a prized veteran that said, man, I can't wait to get the F out of here. So, you know, it's a mess with Oakland. Now, the Giants defense isn't really good, 25th in defensive efficiency. It's clearly better than Oakland's, and now they've had 2 weeks to prep plus film for Nick Mullins. So let's see what that looks like a little bit. I thought Mullins did a good job. When I went back and watched, obviously everyone was wide open. But the goal was to get the ball out of his hands, and he did a good job at that, right? He held on to the ball for less than 2.3 seconds. It was the fastest among any quarterback in week 9. So Shanahan knew, right? Said to himself, listen, you know, Nick Mullins had 5 turnovers and 93 preseason snaps, which is like the equivalent of a game and a half. I don't want Nick to be under pressure here. Kind of let's have a game plan, get it out, and that's what happened. You'd think you're going to see something similar here. You wonder if the Giants can finally get pressure. They haven't been able to do it this season, 31st in adjusted sack rate, but Olivier Vernon's been out for a big portion of the season. So having him healthy, I think, helps. Maybe you can exploit an offensive line that's allowed some pressure this year. You know, this is so interesting because I'm just such a big Shanahan fan, and he's had extra time. That's the scary thing. Plus, you have Matthew Breida. He's had a few extra days to rest and recover, and I think that's important because he's going to see more carries, right? He's going to have a larger workload, I think, with, I'm going to butcher the guy's name, Mostert. He's now out. So, you know, in San Francisco's offensive line, they've been better in run blocking than pass blocking. And you have the Giants, they're 20th this season in rushing success rate defense, and that includes portions with Snacks Harrison. He's one of the best run stoppers in the league. So I think there's probably maybe a little drop-off there with how good the Giants are actually stopping the run.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, when you look at San Francisco, we know Shanahan can be as scary as there is. I'm not going to put Nick Mullins on the same level as Jimmy G as far as talent, but late last season, San Francisco, when all hope looked lost, I mean, they clearly rattled off a big winning streak. This Giants team, when I try and figure out how to assess them going forward, they elect to come back to Eli Manning out of the bye. Maybe that's because Kyle LaLetta's off-field shenanigans. But, you know, how do we view the Giants? You can read in Odell Beckham's comments and quotes. He says, oh, we're going to win 8 games. We're going to get to the playoffs at 9-7. Odell, put down the blinders and be a little bit more realistic. I mean, what should
we
expect?
It's the bleach. It's the bleach seeping into the brain, I think.
What should we expect from the Giants offensively against the 49ers defense that's had some struggles but has been known to be able to get after the passer from time to time?
I've been kind of pounding the table for Kyle LaLetta. I didn't expect the off-field issue there. And maybe you're right. Maybe that's why we haven't seen him this week. Right, like, you know, off the bye, not going to your young quarterback there, it signals the team's hunting for wins. The question is, are they good enough to get him? But it's clear at this point, based on this decision, based on the quotes that we're reading, being in New York, not wanting to kind of hear that media for the next half season, they're not throwing in the towel here, or else Eli would be on the bench, I would think, right?
You would think. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, but we look at Eli, he's still putting together some... And this, I can't even say, I guess I do have to say this, some of his career best numbers, but the eye test clearly doesn't meet some of the metrics. And knowing he's a sitting duck back there behind an offensive line that's allowed more sacks than everybody in the league except the Browns and Bills, like, I have no idea what the expectations should be for Eli in this primetime setting.
Well, you set it up perfectly because you nailed the spot and the situation and kind of the determinant for this game. And I think it's all about if the Giants can protect Eli, right? And that's the one thing the San Francisco defense has been good at all season. Those young guys that we were kind of asking to step up in our preseason preview podcast, they're stepping up. The San Francisco's 8th in adjusted sack rate right now. If they can get to Eli and cause some turnovers, which he is prone to do because anytime he sees pressure, he's falling to the ground to kind of create the sack. Or he's treating the ball like a hot potato so he doesn't get hit, right? So it's just like we've joked about this. It's fish out of water Eli when pressure comes. The splits here are glaring, right? When Eli is kept clean, when he has a clean pocket, he's completing 76% of his passes with a 103 passer rating and 6 touchdowns. It's well above average play through 9 weeks right now. When the pressure is on, you know, Eli sinks to one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. He's completing 50% of his passes. He's got a 61 passer rating. He's got multiple interceptions, and he's been pressured on 36% of his dropbacks. That's 9th most right now among current regular starting quarterbacks. So that becomes the whole question. If they can protect him, Eli's going to make some plays. If they can't, this is probably going to be another game the Giants lose. And I think one thing that's interesting here, to the credit of the 49ers and their defensive coordinator, to me, they're trending up, right? I was looking at some of the numbers this morning, and I was shocked to see this. They're actually 11th in rushing success rate defense, 5th in passing success rate defense. So they've done a good job there. They've done a good job limiting explosive plays, above average in both rush and pass explosive plays allowed. Now, some of the metrics are certainly trending up because of who they faced, right? Arizona's offense and Byron Leftwich's first game calling plays, and then you had Oakland's offense, which basically quit. But as a whole this season, you look at who they face, it's a pretty good schedule of offenses, right? Vikings, Chiefs, Chargers, Packers, Rams. To me, and I was looking at the numbers this morning, it's one of the top 10 schedules of opposing offenses. So quietly, the 49ers defense has been trending up.
What do we make of these two numbers? We saw the 49ers get bet up from 3 to 3.5 in some locations, and the total kind of tick up from 44 to 45. Have you seen any respected money coming in on either the side of the total?
Yes, both. And so the total from 43 to 45, and again, I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. It's, you know, right now it's the two most important key numbers in the NFL, 44 and 45. So it's a pretty significant move there. The side is interesting, and it's, again, opens 2.5, shoots to 3.5. There is a group on San Francisco. At this point, you're not paying me to lay 3.5. Now, Nick Mullins could absolutely replicate what he did last week. I don't see it. So for me, I'm not laying 3.5. It will be interesting to see, though, if there is a differing point of view at 3.5, because everyone that I spoke to made this spot on 2.5 as their number. Now, once I started to dig in a little bit, the matchup isn't as good as I initially thought it was. I was lining up to be on the Giants here. Then I dug in a little bit and spent, you know, multiple hours on this game. I said, Jesus, the matchup isn't quite what I thought it could be. And so at this point, I am off the game.
And suffice to say, it'll be an opportunity for us to take our push from the weekend and probably roll it into next weekend with this game, at least for me, Payne, not offering a whole heck of a lot of value and opportunity right now.
No, not right now, and obviously it's first thing in the morning. There could be some information that trickles in, and if there is, we'll share it on the Bet the Board Pod Twitter feed. But as it stands right now, there is not, and I may actually take this opportunity to try to get out of the old casa. I may try to be a normal human, which is tough to do.
Ah, well, that's breaking news in and of itself.
Funny guy.
I mean, I try my best. Although it hasn't been my best podcast, and hopefully we can do better going forward. So we'll close up shop here on a Monday morning. Get in, get out of Dodge. Special thanks to Dr. David Chow, who joins us every Monday for all of that injury information to help your fantasy roster and some of your betting prognosis. You can follow him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. As Payne mentioned, you can follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod on Twitter. Follow Payne at Payne Insider, and I am, of course, Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Payne, before we break for 48 hours, any life advice, PSAs, parting shots? I mean, the floor is yours.
I got nothing.
All right. Makes it down and dirty. Best of luck for all of you betting the San Francisco 49ers. No, not the San Francisco Giants, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast. Against the New York Football Giants. It's been one of those weekends, and apparently it's
going to
be one of those Mondays.
What's going on with their pitcher, by the way? Are the Yanks going to go after him?
We'll see. I mean, it'll be very interesting to try and see. The Yankees got to do something this offseason to try and spend exorbitantly to try and bolster that roster. Bringing CeCe back for a one-year deal isn't exactly going to make the difference between pretender and contender and knocking the Red Sox off their lofty perch.
Was a fantastic pitcher this year for what they paid for him, I thought. But yes, they absolutely need to go get a shutdown arm. Maybe they re-sign Happ. And then there's been talks about Corbin coming over in free agency, so that'll be interesting to see. They're looking for lefties, which is, you know, probably what you're looking for in that ballpark because left field's a little bit bigger. So if you get your pull hitters, pull into larger space. So lefties usually fare a little better in that park.
Put that ball onto the porch with a wiffle ball bat if swung at the right day in the optimal wind conditions. But, all right, we're a football podcast first and foremost. So best of luck to all of you, our loyal listeners, on this fine Monday, however you choose to get to the window with the 49ers and Giants. And hopefully, you know, come late Monday night, we'll see that you there. Jesus. All right, I'm closing up shop. We're out of here.